Did you know that fewer than 1 in 7 inventors in Europe are women? To change that, we need to talk about supporting men in the workplace. That may come as a surprise to you, but it's just one of many strong arguments we've heard in 3 recent discussions on the role of women in intellectual property. I am Roberta Romano-Götzsch, the Chief Sustainability Officer at the European Patent Office, and I had the pleasure to moderate one of these conversations. Now, it's my pleasure to share with you highlights of these insightful discussions. How did our guests, eminent women scientists, overcome the many challenges in their journeys? What tips do they offer to the young generation? If you're a man, would you like to know how you can support women in your environment? I've been inspired, as I hope you will be too. Welcome to Talk Innovation. The impulse to set this conversation was a study we at the EPO recently published. It's a study which revealed that only 13% of inventors in Europe are women. And that's far below the levels of countries such as South Korea or China. Within Europe, Latvia, Portugal, Croatia, Spain and Lithuania lead with the highest proportion of women inventors, whereas Germany, Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, and Austria are countries at the bottom of the ranking. You will find links to both the studies as well as full recordings of the discussions in the podcast description. Our first conversation was around women studying in STEM. First of all, let's talk about the leaking pipeline, the phenomenon of the decreasing number of women at successive stages of careers in science and research. And here is Marta Karcevic, Vice President Technology at Qualcomm and our finalist for the European Inventor Award 2019.
I can only speak from my own experience, of course, but yes, I definitely noticed that. So when I was attending high school in Poland and it was math physics profile, definitely STEM, I would say the split between girls and boys was around 50-50. Math Olympiad, very similar in high school, 50-50. When I started to attend university, the participation of women dropped significantly. When I moved into industry, and I work in 3 large companies, so it's probably fairly representative, Nokia, Microsoft, Qualcomm, I would say that usually I see maybe 10% of women in the organization that I am in, give or take a few.
However, part of this leaking pipeline might be related to some misconceptions, as explained by Marta.
When I was thinking about whom do I want to become, what to study, I actually did not consider engineering career at all. And large part of this was that looking at the examples that, friends, family, what was being shown on TV at the time, what's being said in the school, I had completely different perception what engineers really do than what I wanted to do. So I was planning to actually move into academia. That changed when I started to study in Finland. We had very close connections to Nokia and a lot of joint projects. And I realized that I can do a lot of very theoretical work in industry and I might have even bigger support and larger resources at my disposals and work within larger teams than maybe I would be able to do it at university.
So how can we increase the participation of women in STEM? Let's turn to Professor Dorothee Weber-Bruls, patent attorney at Jones Day and professor at Goethe University in Frankfurt, and hear her views.
I think at first we have to attract more female students to STEM-related studies. That should be a crucial point because we just need more in those studies. 29% in physics is not enough. So what can we do? To my mind, we have to start with a science education at an early age. at kindergarten, we can try to motivate and introduce science to girls and boys.
Dorothy also points out the gaps in harmonization of postgraduate education between different EU countries.
So we should try to harmonize the duration until receiving a doctoral degree within the European member states as well as within all possible studies. That should not be 10 years as it is in Germany, because when you start studying at 19 or 20, and 30 is the average age for birth or first child, you can also already see there is a difficulty in making a selection.
Why is the ratio of women named on a patent application so small? Mariana Karepova, the president of the Austrian Patent Office, chimes in.
I think we all know that women are not that good at claiming things for themselves. So that might be one of the reasons. Secondly, nowadays inventions are made in networks, and guess who is better at networking? I think networking is in the DNA of the boys, not girls. Girls always focus in their childhood on a single best friend, while a boy has a gang, a boy plays football, and this is already a network.
And so, what do we need to do to change that?
We were talking about role models again. I think that, and I agree with Dorothy, the environment is much more important than single role models, because this patent world is a purely man's world. We have hardly any female lawyers. We have hardly any female patent attorneys. We have hardly any female patent officers at the companies. We have much less female patent examiners at the patent offices. So we have to work on that first, you know, because I agree very much, women attract other women. Then probably there is this societal agenda, and let me focus a little bit differently on that. If you want a woman to advance, you have to support men. You have to support men as fathers, as family persons, and especially in this environment of research and development. Because it's hard for women and men to take care of their children if you don't know how long a chemical experiment will take you, or if you don't know when you will succeed solving a bug in your software. It's very difficult to plan. But men find it easier to stay longer at work, because usually a woman stands up and goes to pick up her children from school. You know, and this is also well accepted in the heads of the executive. Well, women have to go to pick up their children. We have to change that. The CEOs have to accept that a man cannot work indefinite hours, that also he has to stand up to quit working and to go to school or to kindergarten. You know, and then a woman can maybe work longer hours and have less disadvantages.
And how can bosses support women better? Mariana again.
Women need real support. Why do I emphasize this real? Because this issue of women empowerment, it's very en vogue today. There are many events, gala events, panel discussions, women magazines publish photos of women who made it, you know. And I have a fear that we get stuck in this kind of society feminism. Instead of this, actually, women like us should constantly question themselves and check some boxes, like, if I have a position to fill in my company, consider a woman. And it doesn't have always to be executive position, but to lead a project, to lead a team. If I go networking, don't go alone. Always take a young woman from your team with you. Take care of her, introduce her to some important contacts. Analyze in your company what are actually the career aspirations my female employees have. Who are my high potentials? Do I have right tools to support them, to encourage them? Support men. When you draw your equality plans, have a look if men have the same chances to take care of their children. You know, this is kind of my private checklist, and it doesn't go automatically. You know, you have to remind yourself every day about this.
Our second discussion panel focused on mobility, especially international mobility of women in science careers. One of the striking findings of our study is that the share of women inventor is significantly higher among migrant than native scientists. Why is that? Let's discuss. To start, Eida Lujodice, a participant in the EPO Young Professional Program, describes the vicious circle, the discrepancy between what women want to achieve in their lives and careers and the societal perception of their wishes.
We have to look at the reality of the situation versus our perception of it. Because what may be happening is that people assume that women who have families, who have spouses, who have partners, that they will be less likely to want to move abroad. And this may be because of family commitments. And I don't mean this only in the traditional sense of women are usually the ones taking care of their sons and daughters, but also in the sense they're the ones who are burdened with the responsibility of taking care of the elderly most of the time. There's also that to look at. Or they may not be the main breadwinner of the family. And so they may not think it's worth it to pursue an international career abroad and potentially jeopardize the position of their spouse or their partner. So these balance issues, they may be right, but our perception of it may be wrong. And what I mean by this is that it may be that all these things hold for a woman, but they may still want to make the move abroad. But because we assume as a society or as a company, as a research institute, that they don't want to, it means that these opportunities abroad, it never gets to them. They don't get to hear about them, or they simply don't get nominated for it. And what we're doing is that we're creating a vicious cycle where we have, you know, on the one side, less women moving abroad. On the other side, less role models of women moving abroad. And then we have the younger generations who have very little to look up to. And this is the vicious cycle that I think we need to break.
What about the role of institutions active in the IP ecosystem? Here, Valencia Martin-Wallace, Deputy Commissioner for Patents at the United States Patent and Trademark Office, shares her experiences the USPTO has made with bringing opportunities to the disadvantaged communities going beyond gender bias.
We're looking at under-resourced, underserved, both geographically as well as economically. And we've found that when we go to the people, if we go to the engineers and scientists, as opposed to them trying to find us, we're going to have a greater amount of success and impact in bringing that opportunity and access, that education to those opportunities. And that is what's helping us to really expand more innovation and inventorship across the United States. But also in having these conversations like we're having right now, in having these conversations that I have routinely with other IPOs, with WIPO, and harmonizing how we're looking at things, not only demographically, not only looking at women, but looking, as you say, socioeconomically, geographically, and really making this community smaller by harmonizing and bringing together the best practices of how to address and meet people where they are to bring them the opportunities, education, and access. And education not only of inventorship and entrepreneurship, but of those opportunities to then collaborate and partner outside of the United States with other offices.
And what about our home turf, Europe? Let's cross to Portugal, one of the countries leading in women's proportion of inventors, and let's hear from Ana Bandeira, president of the Directive Council of the Portuguese Institute of Industrial Property.
what we do for that, we have some programs such as Women Engineers for a Day that intends to promote among young students in no higher education the choice of engineering and technology and science, taking away the idea that these are male domains. I think this program is very useful. We had already very good results with 10,000 of young people inside this program. And I believe that these kinds of initiatives are essential to show to young girls, girls and women that they can specialize in all STEM fields anywhere in the world.
Helen Lee, distinguished inventor and winner of the 2016 European Inventor Award Popular Prize, shares what ingredients, including chutzpah, helped her achieve a successful scientific career.
I believe if you have the passion and you have the brain, which goes with women inventors, but I think a bit of luck as well. And so I have tried very hard to find three things united together: a boss who is flexible and can respect the fact that in a woman's life, there's more dimensions than just in a man's life. And also, I was very careful in looking at the company that I work for, what their policy has been and how they treat women versus men. And I had found a practical thing with my husband. It was very difficult because he has a good career. And so, but I was going to move to, I had a job offer, which I really couldn't refuse, to go to Chicago. We were in Paris. So in the end, I made a deal with my husband. One time I moved for him, one time he moves for me. And that is how we sort of made it happen. And in the funny way, when I moved from Paris, from the National Transfusion Center to Abbott Laboratories, it's a corporate America, and my husband sort of followed. And I think it was very difficult for him in the first few months. What is this man following this woman in Middle West in the United States? And but he actually took the opportunity and developed an excellent career. So when he was moving to University of Cambridge because of a chair, then I moved for him. And so that is how we sort of did that. But I do want to tell you one little anecdote, because institutionally, women still do sometimes have a little bit of a harder time. And so I was... my husband was offered a post, chair, and then when I interview with the department head of the department, he said, "I can give you a senior postdoc position, and you report to this Willem." I said, "Excuse me. I have given you my CV. Can you take another look? I have over 100 people reporting to me, and now you're going to make me go report to a senior postdoc." And I said, "That doesn't work for me." So he then says, "Well, what position do you think you should have?" I said, "Well, I think I'm every bit as good as my husband, and he has a professorship." I realized in the university, you don't just give a chair easily. So I said, the lowest I would take is a reader. And I got that. But it really takes, I think, in some way, a chutzpah to say, "No, I deserve this. You don't treat a woman differently."
Our third discussion was around women and teamwork, with a focus on leadership, despite different personalities, on mentoring and government initiatives. First off, Nuria Espargalas, inventor and finalist for the European Inventor Award 2022, argues that in fields where complex problems need to be solved, teamwork is pivotal to the success of the projects. She is joined in this exchange by Nelly Simon, EPO Vice President Corporate Services, and Catherine Muir, Director General of the Norwegian Industrial Property Office.
The work we do in chemistry, biochemistry, pharmaceuticals is very complex and is getting more complex every day. And it's not that we thrive more in team. The type of work that we have to deal with needs a team because it's extremely complex. And my conclusion from my experience and what I have read in the report prepared by the European Patent Office reflects that we are working in complex problems and therefore we need to build up teams for solving those problems. And this is a difference from 20, 30 years ago, maybe, and from other fields, like in mechanical engineering, where you probably have an idea by yourself and you just need to build it or realize it is not an extremely complex problem that you are working on. And that requires as well multidisciplinarity, of course.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I wanted to take us as a next step, is that we are getting more and more in research, multidisciplinary. It's more and more collaborative in a lot of disciplines where women are presented. This is happening more and more. So is that going to be an opportunity for women inventors to play a bigger role, Catherine, maybe from your experience?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'm thank you for what both Nuria and Syria are saying. I fully agree with them. That aligns with my experience as well. And then I would like to add one factor, and that I think is personality, actually. We do all have different personalities, and some personalities are more, also when it comes to female, you know, more likely to take on higher positions, basically, and leading teams. And I guess that is the interesting question here. So what about the future? So, and then I guess it's about, okay, how do we allow for it? What is the culture? Do we actually stimulate and motivate for also female taking on positions in the team? Or how is this actually done? I think that is at least one of the key questions that we need to ask ourselves when we move forward.
Do women behave differently than men in teams? Does it have to remain a gender issue, or can we all take a different approach? Sarah Nargolwala, managing partner at Plasro IP, argues that both men and women should try to be their best selves in teams.
Each one of us has to be able to bring themselves to the table and to be who they are without having this kind of bias stereotype. So at the present time, I still think that a lot of women will join a team to look at what's happening with all the team members and try to help each team member be their best self. And a man will perhaps join the team and say, the best way I can help this team is to be my best self. That's something that I have observed. That's something I think we need to work on, not necessarily work against, but work on, so that each personality, as Catherine said, can show itself, and each of us can be free to behave in our best way, because that's what's going to get the best result in the end, and that's what we all want.
Nuria is convinced there's a role for parents to play.
It's very, very important to work from very early ages, so you can also help children, regardless of the gender, to develop a different personality and to help them in the future, in their future careers, to become leaders in teams if they want to be.
How do we achieve a greater participation of women in team leader roles? Catherine shares her experience and practice.
Mentoring is a kind of key thing, I think. And then, of course, myself, I'm 53, and you know, looking at the younger and female, of course, also men, but also female, you know, in my organization or outside my organization as well. And then motivating, backing, and being a very good role model. I think that is very important also.
What about mentoring? Is it only up to women to mentor other women? Catherine feels strongly about it.
We'd also like to say that I think, yes, it's for female to back and mentor other women, but it's also for men that actually have a thought around or thought about this and also actually are backing it, saying it, but not only saying it, but also doing it. I think that's a good combination. You talk about it, but you also do it. That's really when it's, then it shows that you actually mean it, and it
it gets effects.
Is gender diversity the only type of diversity we need in teams? Sarah is a fan of the public lab culture.
One important thing to mention here is because the, gender equality is bringing more diversity to teams. I think it's not just gender that brings diversity to teams. Obviously, it's different types of backgrounds, different types of attitudes, different types of people have been raised in different cultures differently. I was born in Pakistan, I moved to Canada, and then I met a Frenchman, and here I am. So that's my diversity and my story. And I think that has helped me learn about other cultures, helped me learn about how people bring important skills, different types of skills to a team. And so I would say, let's go for the public research institution model. If you go to a lab, I think anywhere in the world, I've been to labs in Boston, I've been to labs in Korea, I've been to labs in France, in England, you have people from everywhere. You have women, you have men, you have brown women, brown men, black, all the different cultural aspects. And I think that is something that we need to work towards. And your work at the EPO is helping bring that to the spotlight. So thank you.
And what about initiatives aiming at encouraging women to achieve greater economic power? Catherine chimes in.
We also see in Norway that those that it's important who's actually having shares in companies. One thing is being the inventor, but who's actually investing? So also, the point that also you have female investors is actually very, very crucial. And again, Norway, we have initiatives called She Invests, for example. The biggest bank is having a campaign about and actually helping women start to invest because it feels very risky. So that lowering the barrier for females as well to actually start investing. And that's something that I really believe in that as well. Having a grip on the economy is also having a grip on the steering wheel. And that's an important factor.
And here's Roberta again. I hope you were as inspired by this podcast as I was. I want to leave you with one more quote, which I think hits the nail on the head as to why we should put our energy into supporting women in IP. Just to support their careers? Helen thinks there's much more at stake.
I think the world would be a better place if there were more women inventors who can exploit their invention and make a difference, not only at home, but at work. The world will benefit from more women inventors. So it isn't just doing for women, but the women doing what they contribute for the world to make it a better place.
That's it for today from us. But what are your ideas, your comments, your experiences? Let us know on Twitter or LinkedIn. To read the whole study and listen to full discussions, follow links in the podcast descriptions. Until next time on Talk Innovation.